Welcome back, one and all, to another day here at The Damage Report with me, John DeRola. And very excitingly, we've got the epic politics man himself, Michael Schorr. How's it going?
It's great, John. It's great to be here. It's great to be on The Damage Report. Great to be back. Always feels like being back home. So here we are. And I'm at home. And The Damage Report feels more like home than my own.
Yeah. You might be getting your signals crossed. You might feel at home because you're home. Actually, I feel like I'm at work, actually, which oddly enough, I am. But anyway.
So, yeah, I guess remind that everything I just said, strike it.
I've already forgotten it. No, we're very excited to have you here, especially, well, for two reasons, especially. One, we're in the final weeks of this midterm election that is going to be consequential. I know it's cliched to say this is the most important election ever, and it's probably not, but it feels like a pretty big one. I don't know, it feels like an important one. And we're gonna dive into a few of those races, but also because you've recently been doing some interviews at Trump rallies. And I am glad to see that you have made it through without bodily injury or any obvious signs of mental distress. So that's right. Good.
None of the mental distress is obvious, but there's plenty of it. You know, they register in different ways than they used to. They register as less serious, more sad, more cult-like, in the real sense of the word, more pathetic. And it's not about Trump anymore. It's about the people that go and what they say and what they're following. And it's really sad, is what it is. So it used to be scary because he, you know, was going to be president at one time. He was president another time. And you saw the kinds of people that he was attracting at different times, forgetting his politics. It was what he was attracting. And now there's something that's a little sort of forlorn about these people. And, just marching from spot to spot to be part of this little, you know, the sense of belonging to what is a disastrous thing to belong to.
Yeah, and it's not like there's not other hobbies that you could have. Play board games, honestly. There's great ones coming out every week. Anyway, I like your thing about we need to check in every once in a while to know what they believe. There's a show out on Netflix right now called The Watcher that I assume you haven't seen.
I haven't seen it, but I know of it actually, which for me a lot. So
that is the basic idea is that a family moves into a house and starts receiving threatening letters. And many people's automatic response would be, well, stop reading the letters. But the thing is, while the letters are terrifying, they're also kind of specific. And you kind of need to know what specific threats you should be worried about. And so you check the mail. And I feel like you're checking our mail when you go to those Trump rallies.
I like the way I'm happy to do that. That's a good way of putting it. And there is that sort of journalistic conundrum that people find themselves in. So should this be covered, or are we bringing attention to something that should just be the tree falling in the woods? But like you said, there is something that is significant and perhaps impactful in what goes on at these places. So happy to check the mail.
Yes, and we will be talking about a few of those beliefs when we do our little overview of the midterms in just a few minutes. We're gonna be starting off with something a little bit more fun, perhaps a little bit more substantive in just a sec. But first, for all of you now joining us, please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already so that people know we're live, and prepare yourself because I will be joining Nina Turner for the second ever episode of Unbossed coming up just a little bit later on today. More details to come. For now, though, if you want to send us any comments, tweets, or super chats, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Michael, are you ready to start the show?
Let's do it. Let's report the damage.
Let's get into some of that damage. We're gonna start off with this.
Democrats are pointing to your own documents to tell Americans that you are preparing to cut entitlements. Here's what the headline is. House GOP decides slashing is the new saving. This year's Republican Study Committee's fiscal year 2023 budget openly calls for slashing and privatizing Social Security, raising the retirement age to 70 and ending Medicare as we know it. Now, I got a tweet from a viewer this week who says he's a Republican. He's very worried about you cutting his Medicare. He says it's a deal breaker and a betrayal by the GOP. So what's your answer?
So let's pause there for a second, because this is kind of fascinating, actually. That is Shannon Bream, an anchor on Fox, talking to Steve Scalise. And doing two things that you don't see nearly enough in either case. One is focusing on the actual substantive policy consequences of these midterms. The possibility that once again, the right could be trying to destroy these quote unquote entitlement programs in Medicare and Social Security. And actually like presenting not only just what Nancy Pelosi is saying about it, but also right wingers apparently watching the show that are worried about it. This is very consequential. It's important for Steve Scalise to reassure the right wing base that, of course, they're not going to do anything like this. He's given an opportunity. Let's see how he addresses it.
You go to a restaurant, you're waiting an hour for a table, and you're seeing a third of them empty because the government started paying people not to work. That drains programs like Social Security and Medicare. So let's strengthen those programs and stop them from going bankrupt. And let's also, by the way, stop the government getting in this business of paying people not to work when everybody's looking for workers right now.
But fair to say that pointing to your own documents, there are some changes to those programs that would happen.
There's not anything that we proposed in the commitment to America. In fact, in the commitment to America, we talk specifically about
the fiscal year.
In the commitment to America, we talk. Well, they didn't do a budget this year.
Okay, so that was shockingly good on the part of Shannon Bream. She's holding him to account for the things they've literally stated they want to do. Maybe not Steve Scalise. Personally, I don't know if it's his biggest priority, but the right wants to do it. That's what they're saying. The documents are out there. And he tries to evade saying they don't have a budget, which is not an answer to the question at all. And they're paying people to not work, which I always thought was a stupid thing to focus on. But even if you were going to focus on it, it's 2022 now. It's actually the fall of 2022. You're referencing a couple of years ago. How is that an adequate response to the question, are you going to force people to grind out years more labor before they're finally allowed to put down their burdens? And he had nothing, Michael.
Even Steve Scalise doesn't have an answer to that. First of all, he's completely flustered by the fact that Shannon Bream is holding him, taking him to task over this. And he's having to answer questions when it's easier to speak to these people and he's more accustomed to speaking to these people in very sort of broad brush ways. But what you are seeing too is when Republicans are asked about legislation below the catchphrase, right? Below the commitment to America, which is not on its surface as a bad campaign slogan. When they're asked to go underneath that, they don't really know what to do about it. And you're seeing that here. They are sloganeers. And when it comes to the meat and potatoes of what they're sloganeering, they can't back it up. And that's what Scalise is saying here. He can't even come up with the facts. And like you just said, John, this is old. These are old arguments. And I'm not an economist, but it seems to me if fewer people are working, that would be less taxing on Social Security. And not that it's a good thing that restaurants might have a lower hiring threshold now, et cetera. And that's a totally different conversation. But even the math doesn't seem to add up the way Scalise has it. And lastly, you talk about, I don't know how much Steve Scalise has to do with this. I don't want to single him out. Well, he is the minority whip in the House, and he's the person who's going to have to sell this to his caucus and the other caucus. So I would argue he has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, look. I'm not really surprised by his response. I'm surprised that the Republicans actually wrote it down on a piece of paper at all. We know that it's a goal of theirs. It's been a goal of theirs for very long.
Right.
We understand it's not difficult to grasp what the Republicans actually want to do because there's basically nothing on that list and it's always the same thing. There should be fewer regulations, there should be fewer taxes, and we should put less government money into helping non-poor people. I mean, that's really as simple as it is. And so when we talk about how the Republicans talk about one thing but really want to do another thing, they're focusing on the trans community, not because for their entire lives they've had a burning passion to fight back against drag queens, but because it's a lot easier to get people to get fired up and angry and hateful and fearful about that than it is to just come out and honestly say, we're campaigning on making you work longer. Your grandma, she should be a Walmart greeter for 3 more years than she is right now. That is not a popular thing to run on. That is why they obfuscate with all this culture war stuff.
But we should
say, what they need though is better messengers.
John, they obfuscate successfully. They're good at it and it works. And they don't, the part of that success is having the Shannon Breams of the world sort of helping them along. And that's why when you see Shannon Bream challenge them on this, it's a totally compelling moment because they have to think about what it is they're doing. But you know, the obfuscation, while reprehensible, has worked for them for a long time.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, look, that's one thing that in theory, I think I don't know, it would be great to have the midterms about whether they're going to destroy Social Security and Medicare. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem like what it's about. So we're gonna turn now to what it is about. Really fast, people are saying in the chat, drag queens and trans people are two different things. I am 100% aware of that. I am not attempting to conflate that in any way. Those are two things that the right is constantly talking about. I am fully aware, and I hope that my coverage of this topic month after month after month has been reflective of that. They are conflating that and attacking both communities, as we'll be talking about in the aftermath of this very show. Sorry, Michael, were you gonna say something?
I was gonna say your coverage has acquitted you of thinking that those are the same things. I would not worry. That, John, and I'm sure people who watch this show know that about you.
I think so. I don't want anyone to be offended. Just trying to reassure about what I actually know and believe.
Basically, what you're basically saying is the Republicans use wedge issues, and those are cobbled together as part of a wedge issue, and that's what it is.
Exactly. Okay, now let's talk about maybe some of the worst news I've read in a while. Despite a few months of the midterm election seeming to trend towards the Democrats for a few reasons. One, Biden and the Democrats started to do some stuff. They passed the climate bill. They did the student debt cancellation. Oh, and also the right is trying to make Gilead come true. That has apparently now stalled and is perhaps moving in the opposite direction. New poll shows that 49% of likely voters say they plan to vote for a Republican to represent them in Congress this election, compared with 45% who plan to vote for a Democrat. That had been just a month ago a 1-point advantage for the Democrats. So I'm not a mathematician or anything, but like 1 in 20 Americans that plan to vote has now flipped for some reason. And we're gonna try to figure it out. Specifically, Republicans have opened up a 10-point lead amongst independent voters. Democrats had a 3-point edge amongst independents back in September. The biggest shift has come amongst women who identify as independent voters. They favored the Democrats by 14 points just a month ago. Now they favor Republicans by 18 points. They are apparently independent and want their rights to be independent of their own choices. I don't know, they're free to believe whatever they want and vote for whoever they want, but that is a massive shift inside of 1 month. The New York Times has interviewed several of these quote unquote independent voters. One, Robin Ackerman says, I'm shifting more towards Republican because I feel like they're more geared towards business. Robin Ackerman is a Democrat, by the way, and isn't going to be focusing on the social issues, the cultural stuff, rather on the Republicans who are more for business. And that is a hell of a position to take. I don't understand at this point how you could possibly think under any circumstances the Republicans taking power is going to be a good thing for the economy. But maybe that's just my bias and I'm talking more generally, but specifically in this case, the Republicans could not be more clear that one of the main reasons they want to take power in the midterms is to wreak havoc and cause as much economic harm as possible. So that Biden or Kamala Harris or Pete Buttigieg or whoever it is running in 2024 will look as bad as possible. They're not even pretending to feel some sort of ethical or policy-based obligation to deliver for America. The little bit of bipartisanship they've been willing to engage up until this point is basically going to be Thanos'd away if they take power. And so for all of the reasons to believe that the Republicans should take over, the idea that they're going to be serious, responsible stewards of the economy is one of the most on its face laughable. But maybe I'm wrong. And I'm not surprised, Michael, that a lot of people would think that for some reason, but what do you make of it?
Well, I make you have to dig deep into this stuff. Shane's a great reporter, and I'm sure he has. Some of this polling, either the one that showed the Democrats up 14 points or the one that shows the Republicans up 18 points among independent women, is wrong. I mean, there's no a 32-point shift in a month that has seen no real action points to the inaccuracy of one or both of those polls, and likely both. What everyone has to realize too is that these midterm elections typically do go to the party out of office. The other part of this is that we're learning now, and I think a poll out of New York and the governor's race there today, which shows Kathy Hochul only 4 points ahead of Lee Zeldin, it shows us that crime is, for better or worse, an issue that's being tagged or for correct or incorrect reasons, tagged on Democrats. And the Republicans are using that as a wedge issue successfully in a lot of these races. I would imagine that the Hochul race for governor of New York is one absolutely that where crime is the issue. So if they're able to successfully do that in a lot of the districts and a lot of the areas where there's Democratic control in states or cities, it stands to reason that that's going to change the who are you likely to vote for result. Polling, though, again, also flawed. The way we poll, we're learning how to poll again. It used to be that the two difficult states to poll were Nevada and Alaska, and every other state was a standard poll. You polled 6 o'clock in the evening, you called. Now they're doing online because they can't call. They're doing cell phones, which you can't always get access to. People don't answer cell phone calls from numbers they don't know. It poses a challenge. So the polling audience the polling industry is learning how to manufacture results through those different ways of polling that they haven't had to do before. So I wouldn't put all my stock in these polls, but what it is telling us is that people are falling for exactly what you just said, John, which is the Republicans are saying they would be better for the economy without saying, of course, that they would wreak havoc on the economy, which is likely what would happen because they want to set up 2024 for themselves. And they can do things to keep the economy stable, but some of those numbers but through legislation, if they run the House, are going to be a disaster that they're going to try and pin on the White House.
Yeah, 100%. And what? Again, like just saying inflation is bad is not a solution to inflation, especially when it's coupled by like opposing in rhetoric and votes literally any effort to fight back against inflation in literally any way, particularly in gas prices. They've had no interest because why would they? They want the prices to be high. They have to say that they don't, but politically they want them to be high and they can afford for them to be high because they're rich. So it's just the idea. What if you're an independent voter, what do you think they're going to do other than try to pass tax cuts for the rich? Which worked like gangbusters the last three times they did it. I don't know what they even think is going to happen.
Well, you know, mildly interested voters don't think that deeply about it. They think, there are a lot of homeless people. Oh, there's a lot of crime. Oh, these people are in power. I'm going to vote for the other person. They don't think about tax cuts. They don't think about inflation. They don't think about long-term spending. They don't think about a budget not being put forward that's going to have their best interests. They don't think about tax loopholes for the petroleum industry. So that's what you're up against here. And the educated voters, I would imagine the people that spend a lot of time digging into this stuff, know this, and they are not going to vote for the Republicans this time, most of them. Some of them will because that's just their will. But I think it's a big problem because of the sort of the headline-ness of the way people engage in politics these days.
And pretty much everything. And my final point before we move on to stuff outside of the economy is if I can provide a bit of a spoiler for what's going to happen leading into 2024, the Republicans now need to take control of Congress because the Democrats in Congress are responsible for how bad the economy is, the inflation, the stock market, and all that. As a spoiler alert, if things continue to be bad or indeed get worse, I'm thinking the Republicans won't feel like they're responsible if they've been in charge for the next 2 years going into 2024. It's a bold prediction, I know, but I think we might see a bit of hypocrisy on that in about 2 years.
I don't know what would ever make you say that.
Anyway, let's open to the other results. Recent polling results show that people are worried about the future of democracy. They're just not worried enough to actually do anything to protect it, which is fun. So, will voters vote for candidates who have rejected the 2020 election, which no serious thinking person actually believes was based on fraud? Well, in general, 18% of voters are very open to voting for candidates that believe the big lie. 21% more are somewhat open. Look, even 12% of Democrats are seemingly okay with it. That's a bizarre number. And the independents are high too at 37%. There's basically no Republicans, 1 in 5, that aren't going to vote for someone who openly believes that the 2020 election was stolen, that believes that the pretext for January 6th was perfectly legitimate, that, you know, has 2,000 mules in their Netflix queue, whatever. That is what we're facing. By the way, 71% of Republicans overall perfectly fine with it. Still 12% of Democrats. It's so crazy. And like to draw it to some of the other stuff that I'm talking about here, 26% of voters say that they've heard of 2,000 Mules, the most clownishly, buffoonishly debunkable election fraud conspiracy movie ever made. Of Republicans who have heard about it, only 2% found it to be unbelievable. Virtually every single one of them believes what they hear there. 71% at the same time say that democracy is at risk. But maybe that's like a good thing. It's like an arsonist saying that the structural integrity of the building is at risk while gleefully laughing and pouring oil on it, I suppose. I don't know. At the same time, 55% of Republican voters say that mail-in voting is a major threat to democracy. So we are living in truly insane times, Michael.
Well, we are, but these are people who get their news from people like Newsmax and One America News who say that mail-in voting is dangerous to democracy. And so what do? They turn around and they spew it out again. And I learned that, you know, when I go to these rallies and I stand outside and talk to these people, that's what you're hearing. They believe what they're talking about when you challenge it on them. Similarly to when we just heard Steve Scalise challenged by Shannon Bream, if you ask them what's under the hood, they have no idea. They don't know what to talk about. Then they start fumbling for answers and replies. But the bottom line is, A, I don't believe that 26% of American voters have heard of 10,000 Mules. I just simply don't believe it. And that would have to be proven to me in other polling. But even still, there are people that only want to believe it going in, so they're going to believe it. And that's, you know, that's the bottom line. So the numbers underneath the undercard stuff doesn't move me very much. It's just the fact that it's there and people don't care about it that's the most upsetting.
Yeah. Look, there's a lot. If people want to head over to the New York Times and take a look at this, there's a lot of stuff about, you know, people's support for QAnon and just a lot of nonsense. There is, you know, like I how many elections have I covered? I started doing this in 2012, so not that many of them. And I assume the American people have never been great at critical thinking and really open-minded and really do their own research or anything like that. But it feels like things have got to be worse, more irrational, more unreasonable. Michael, is this just how it's always been, or is it getting worse?
You know, it's hard. It's first of all, I want to talk about you starting in 2012. What was your first appearance as a journalist? What show were you on? Well,
to the extent that I can be classified as one at all outside of TYT University, I appeared on your show 2012.
Yeah, with the convenient TYT in the middle. It was the best logo ever. All right, let's go back to what you're talking about, though. Has it always been like this? It's never worse than it was, is what I always say. Like, when you're living through a time, you think it's as bad as it possibly could be, worse than it ever was. And then the next time comes along and another generation of people who follow this stuff say this is the worst it's ever been. So I think politics has always been divisive. It's always been ugly. It's always been dirty. And it's always been bad. I think now, though, that you're dealing with a reality of people who don't take reality in very well is what makes this a real challenge and a very difficult time to be in politics, to be covering politics, to be polling politics. So I think it's pretty bad because people are tribal once again. And I'm not saying it's never happened that way again, but you cannot penetrate. You're never going to have a president over 50% popularity, I don't think, in our lifetime because of that. It doesn't mean that there's some that will be more popular than others. It's just we are so divided in that way. That's what makes a lot of this policy so impenetrable.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about a little bit of that tribalism, how it plays out in defense of particular candidates after our break. We'll be back in just a few. Anyway, man, time starts flying by as you get older. The years and indeed the seconds remaining in your social break. Anyway, with that said, why don't we dive into one of these consequential races we were just talking about? Herschel Walker is finally copping to the check that a woman says he gave to her to pay for an abortion that he also pressured her to have. Now, he's not admitting to all of that, but he's right there on the cusp. Take a look at this.
Why not reach out to her? And if
why should I? Why do I need to?
NBC News has now spoken to that former girlfriend who provided us with what she says is a copy of a $700 check that Walker gave her to pay for the abortion and a receipt from the medical center in Georgia where she alleges it took place. NBC News is not revealing the woman's identity or the documents to protect the privacy of all parties, but we did show a copy of the check to Walker, who said the allegation he paid for an abortion isn't true.
This is still a lie because she's the mother of my child. So you're going to see me a check or somebody giving a check. So that I'm saying it's a lie.
Do you know what this $700 check is
for? I have no idea what that can be for.
Is that your signature on the check, though?
Let me see. It could be. But it doesn't matter whether it's my signature or not.
When pressed, Walker said definitively for the first time, the check is his.
Yes, that's my check.
Why should voters believe you in this?
Voters should believe me because I've been very transparent about everything I've ever done.
Transparent to the extent that God, that guy can't lie. He is really, really bad at hiding when he's lying. And I don't just mean that it wasn't for an abortion, that obvious lie. Did you see the other lies in that? It might not have been super clear unless you've been covering this story for a long time. Now, he seems to understand, to the extent that Herschel Walker can be said to understand anything, that accepting that he wrote the woman the $700 check is going to be really damning. But he has a defense, and the defense is, well, hold on. You can't just assume that the $700 is for an abortion. After all, I give her checks because she's the mother of my child, so that's just a normal check that I would send to her. Except that they didn't have a child together for years after the abortion, years after the check was sent out. Again, like there, it's a horrible defense that falls apart if you just breathe on it just a little bit. But it doesn't have to be a good defense because at the end of the day, he doesn't need to reassure right wingers in Georgia that he's telling the truth because, and I can't stress this enough, they don't care. Right. They don't care. Every single one of those Republicans who believes that abortion is literally murder, and that if you assist someone in having an abortion, you are assisting in murder, do not care that he is, in their own eyes, a murderer. It is irrelevant. He can do a stupid thing where he pretends to need to put his glasses on to see the check. It can be transparent because the only thing that's more transparent is how little his base actually cares about the things they profess to hold as principles. Anyway, Michael, what do you think?
Yeah, and then you have Tom Cotton and Rick Scott going to Georgia to support him. And clearly, they are both, ostensibly pro-life, anti-abortion candidates or senators. And they're supporting a candidate who is professing to be that. However, he has this checkered past. They don't care. They want that vote on the Senate floor, and they want to take Raphael Warnock's vote away. And so that hypocrisy is the kind of hypocrisy that we were talking about earlier, and that we talk about all the time. They don't care. They want the majority, and it doesn't bother them one iota that this guy is lying through his teeth about a check. What did he saying? He wrote this check and then had a child 4 years later. He's saying he's putting a down payment on child support payments, which also presumes that if he were going to have had a child with this woman, he would not have been present in that woman's life to begin with. So you don't go in with sort of the prenuptial of child support payments. It's just crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you're going to try to present yourself as a person who would give future child support, don't live your life as the guy who regularly has to be dragged into court to pay the child support that you've already been mandated to have to give. Yeah. So again, just it's see-through. He lied. He continues to lie. Nobody cares. He just did this campaign event basically with Sean Hannity on Sean Hannity's show. This is the guy who's more explicitly riddled with scandals than maybe anyone since Donald Trump. Put in soft quest, nothing. No attempt to dig, no ethical obligation, no journalistic obligation, nothing.
Let's turn, he's not a journalist though. So you shouldn't say true. There's a journalistic obligation. I saw Sean Hannity, I was at a Ted Cruz rally where Sean Hannity was a speaker in the 2018 midterm. And so you look at that's not a journalist anymore. That is somebody yeah. who's not a journalist. So he doesn't have an obligation to ask tough questions. So it doesn't bother me that he didn't because he's not a journalist.
Great point. Let's very quickly just mention this. You would think, perhaps, if you're new to American politics, that having a candidate who has regularly lied about being a member of law enforcement stand on stage at a debate and then bring out effectively a fake badge, some honorary thing that was given to him as defense of these claims he's made to be an FBI agent in the past, would be damaging to him, that it would hurt him in some way. But I would like to welcome you to America in 2022. No, they're doubling down on this. Well, not doubling down on it. That would imply that you'd end up with two badges. No, they're going for 1,000 badges, as you'll soon see. A strategist for Herschel Walker says Herschel Walker has been a friend to law enforcement and has a record of honoring police. If Senator Warnock wants to highlight this, then bring it on. It just gives us a chance to talk about Herschel's support of law enforcement and law enforcement support for him. It's a great issue for us. Well, generally, it's a great issue for them. Every once in a while on January 6th, they try to beat every cop they can see to death with their bare hands. But other than that, they're generally supportive of law enforcement. That is true. So what are they doing? They're cutting the video of him holding up the stupid fake badge and they're using it in their ads. Oh, also their campaign has ordered 1,000 imitation plastic law enforcement badges that say I'm with Herschel as a fundraising tool. So you can get one of those and you too can be an honorary police lieutenant like Herschel Walker is. No, but seriously, this is a comical, laughable, needless own goal from a candidate. And it is going to work. They're going to raise a ton of money. Nobody's going to care because nobody has any expectations for this guy. He can stand up there and act like a petulant, dim-witted four-year-old, and the Republican base will just cheer all the louder. The race, by the way, is within a few points, yeah, in the aggregate. And God only knows with the flaws in polling and enthusiasm and all that, Michael, God only knows he could end up being a senator.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, I think we have to prepare for what we prepared for on an election night where we couldn't possibly see how somebody could elect this person, person A, because it's possible that that person could win it. There's a governor's race there. It is a red state that has two blue senators and went for Biden and Harris in 2020, but nonetheless is still, I would say, a very rurally dominant state. Cobb County and Atlanta make up a big portion of that vote, but still it's a big, big state, Georgia, and it's not a foregone conclusion, and I've seen a lot of candidates who have made it to be the featured candidate, the number one for the party, the nomination for the party. This is probably the weakest, worst candidate in a serious race that I've ever seen, ever.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. I mean, it's a shame because of how insulting it is, but also that there are Republicans in that state who would have made better candidates. So it's a shame for Republicans, yeah, I'm sure. But you know, Raphael Warnock is a serious senator and a cleric, and he's somebody who has taken his job seriously. To have to go up against this and possibly lose is crazy.
It is embarrassing, and we're gonna turn to that in just one sec. But first, I agree. I think he is the worst candidate. Like, there was a candidate not that many years ago that had to make an ad reassuring Republican voters that she was not, in fact, a witch.
Right.
And she doesn't look like the most embarrassing candidate anymore.
No.
Anyway, with that said, we're gonna turn in one second to our third video, if we could tee that up to the TD, because they're not really trying to make the case that Herschel Walker will be a good politician or whatever. And they're going up against Raphael Warnock, who is everything that they say they want. They say they want a religious candidate or whatever. So they need to tear that apart. Here is their latest attempt to do that.
We're all in for Herschel. I think Herschel is a great guy, and I think he's being slandered and lied about. Herschel had a great debate against Raphael Warnock, and Donald Trump is 100% behind Herschel Walker. Tell us about Herschel. Tell us about it, because we really need you to drive real turnout for Herschel. We need the MAGA America First base to turn out for Herschel. Tell us about it.
Well, I feel very confident in rural Georgia turning out for Herschel Walker. That's my district, Charlie. We're a rural district, manufacturing district, very similar to the parts of Georgia where Herschel Walker came from, where he grew up, very similar. And similar in our values, similar in our Christian faith. most of us in Georgia know that have heard him speak before. He did such a good job. And I think he put a lot of the criticism to bed. Mm-hmm. And I truly feel like Herschel's going to win here in Georgia, and we're going to defeat Raphael Warnock, who calls himself a Christian, calls himself
it's
a
so
pastor,
sick.
But preaches abortion from the pulpit. And it's such an abomination. It's
it
completely
is.
Wrong. It's well, evil.
Okay, so first of all, I'd like to take the opportunity to actually agree with Charlie Kirk on something. It doesn't often happen, but I agree with him that Herschel Walker is being lied about. He just leaves out that it's Herschel Walker that's doing the lying. He's the one that is lying. And to the extent that he's put any of these scandals to bed, Marjorie Greene, he probably then slept with it and encouraged the scandals to get an abortion. The part of the story that you're conveniently leaving out. If it's an abomination for Raphael Warnock to say that people should be able to have these rights, which is consistent with the Bible, by the way, read it at some point if you're capable, then you'd think the guy who's going around encouraging women to have abortions and then doing a laughable job in attempting to pretend that it didn't happen would also be an abomination. But the core of this, Michael, of course, is they want to imply that the guy who has regularly held guns to people's heads and encouraged what they consider to be murder is the Christian one. And the guy who is a religious leader is the satanic atheist.
Right, because you have to be perfect on the other side. I mean, Raphael Warnock holds probably the most well-known, famous, and sacred pulpit in America at Ebenezer Baptist Church. It was Dr. Martin Luther King's pulpit. It has a deep history and is probably the most respected in the country. To say that he is not godlike, that he has not come up through the ministry with a godlike approach to everything he does, or God-fearing, as he would probably say, is ridiculous. And to paint Herschel Walker, who has done everything he can possibly do to be anti-Christian, other than perhaps worship God and believe, is an incredible thing that they're willing to pull off. It's the same thing that Donald Trump did. The Christians, in a sort of national way, were able to lift him up as the best Christian option. They were smart about it. They got their Supreme Court justices, but they have a president who goes to church every Sunday right now in Joe Biden. They have a religious and a sort of dedicated servant of his God, and that's not enough for them. They have to look for those things that vary when in fact so many of them are the ones that go off the Christian path, and they forgive when that happens. They don't forgive when it happens on the other side.
100%. Yeah, this isn't for me. I'm an atheist. I don't give a damn. Like, I'm not interested, but you guys say that this is what you want. And you clearly don't actually care about any of this.
Hypocritical, even about religion. I mean, if that's supposed to be the tenet that drives them, they bring their hypocrisy into that as well. And it's poison. It's poison to this debate.
Which I vaguely remember Jesus having thoughts about. People who wield their religion as a cudgel and don't actually live by their own supposed standards. Right. I feel like he's commented on that a time or two.
Never flashed a badge. Jesus never flashed a badge.
100%. You know what we're gonna do? No, we're gonna do one more story really fast. It's gonna be so quick. Okay, let's jump into it. If you've hated Marjorie Greene as a congresswoman, don't worry. Very soon, in just a couple of years, she might not be a congresswoman anymore, but only because she will be moving on up to the White House, at least according to some sources around Donald Trump. They say he has been talking about bringing Marjorie Greene into his administration. Now, as of right now, it's not generally being talked about that she would be his running mate. Although, I don't know, doesn't it feel kind of like that's the only way this could turn out? Like at a deep level, that's the only possible future that awaits us? But let's go with what we know right now. He apparently said to a confidant earlier this year, wouldn't she be great? Saying that maybe it would be a White House staff position or a cabinet post or an agency appointment. He loves Marjorie Greene and would want her to be in a second term. That much was clear. Specifically, one position that he's talked about is giving her some sort of position as a senior official at the Justice Department. The person who he said that to was confused because they said, I don't think she's a lawyer. And you know what? I'm not sure either, but I do have to say, she doesn't really strike me as one. I suspect that she hasn't had much legal training or training of really any sort, maybe not house training even. I feel like she's untrained. That would be my gut. Anyway, if he does become president again, I don't doubt it. I like maybe not Supreme Court or something, but I just, she's gonna be around unless she starts to become too popular. That's the only thing that I think in Trump's eyes could potentially damage her is if she starts to draw too much attention, which is possible because the Trump base, they're lunatics and they want someone who's authentically as insane as they are. And I think that she honestly sells that better than Donald Trump can. So aside from that though, she might well end up as the secretary of God only knows what. What do you think, Michael?
Well, I think getting Senate approval for Marjorie Taylor Greene, even among many Republicans, would be a difficult thing. So it would have to be a job that does not have to clear the Senate in order to be in the administration. I think there are a lot of carts before a lot of horses here, and I don't think that's ever going to be a reality. That it's being discussed in and of itself is just talks about the qualifications of that guy to run again and what his idea of putting together a White House would be. Once again, lesson learned or not learned if he's brought back. I don't think it's going to happen, so I'm not really that concerned. Just the notion though that he likes to sort of taunt the other side, it's consistent in his presidency and his former presidency. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess maybe there would be some Republicans that would be against it. I think for him though, it's just a perfect choice. I mean, government is not supposed to function. You are not supposed to find.
It's for him. I don't think he even thinks that deeply about it, John. And I think you're right. But I don't think he thinks that government's not supposed to function. I think it's supposed to function the way he wants it to, according to him. And I think that it's more important that he needled the other side than he put somebody in position.
Sure.
Succeed. So that's not to me.
Yeah, maybe. You know. I love the idea of her getting, I don't know, Secretary of Defense or something.
Right.
And she's all excited and they move her into her office and she sits at her desk and it's literally the dog wearing goggles surrounded by beakers. Like she wouldn't know what any of that was. She doesn't, she's not even really a congresswoman right now. She hosts a podcast. Can we be clear about that? The idea that she would open up a book and she would write something down and make a phone call. Like it's ridiculous. It's like if you gave my dog Hilo a position in the Department of Energy. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean, and Swin's story is all about, you know, like I get it. It's just sort of like forecasting some of these things that could happen. I don't think we're ever gonna see Secretary Greene.
Okay, well, I hope not. Anyway, with that said, we are gonna take our last break of the hour and come back, talk about maybe a little bit of good news after this. Okay, everybody, let's talk about some good news. Starting with this.
A new student loan application is now open. If you have federal student debt, please visit studentaid.gov. It's easy, simple, and fast. And it's a new day for millions of Americans all across our nation. May God bless you all and may God protect our troops. Thank you.
Okay, so Biden doesn't seem that excited there necessarily, but this is legitimately something to get excited for. If you're one of the many millions of students or former students who are now looking forward to have at least some of your student debt canceled, the process has now begun. There have been a lot of roadblocks along the way, a lot of stumbles, a lot of attempts by some of the companies that manage these loans to try to get people to be stuck with the loans that they have. There are legal challenges to it, and Republicans are trying to tax it in some states, stop it from happening. A lot of disgusting behavior. But as of this week, you can now apply, and the details are provided there by Joe Biden. Supposedly, there have already been 8 million applications that have been filed, which is not only like an objectively large number, but also this is a far smoother rollout, we have to admit, than there was for Obamacare back in the day. There's no huge issue where it got slammed and a bunch of people were blocked. As of right now, people are on the path to having $10,000 to $20,000 of their student debt canceled, and that is certainly some good news. What do you think, Michael?
Yeah, it's definitely, and this is how successful programs start. They don't all start, first of all, 8 million people it shows you how widespread this issue is. I mean, forgetting whether or not it's going to go well, and whether or not there are going to be challenges, or whether or not, you know, it should have been in place. The fact that 8 million people have already applied means that this is a problem that needed addressing in one way or another, and that speaks volumes. So I think it's and look, government programs, there's a lot of red tape. It's there will be problems, there will be malfunctions, there will be frustration, but this is the road to better when it comes to addressing this issue in this way. And so I don't think the president, when the president talks about serious things, he talks about them in serious ways. He doesn't, mm-hmm. He doesn't get up there and do a dog and pony show. And so this is how he's bringing it out, and he's bringing it out at his press conference. And this is a momentous part of the Biden administration for sure.
Yeah. Long term, it's going to be one of the biggest individual things they did to help people who've been needlessly burdened for far too long. There's a member of the chat, I think I've lost the message now, but I think it was Aaron Parker saying, oh, the application is super easy. It took me about 2 minutes. $20K in relief is really going to help my family. Yeah, I can't even imagine how much help that's going to be. A lot of people are going to benefit from this. And now let's go farther in the future. With that said, though, let's jump to our last story of the hour. This one, not so good. We've been saying that with more and more states limiting access to abortion, there are going to be casualties as a result of that. And more evidence of that is rolling in, with particular instances of people needlessly suffering because of the change to the law. We have a woman now, pregnant woman in Tennessee, had high and rising blood pressure, needed to have it dealt with. And we're gonna give you all the details. Couldn't in that state. And in fact, most of the states neighboring Tennessee, it's illegal there too. So they had to drive to North Carolina to save this woman's life. It was a 6-hour drive that she had to take. Here are the details. She got to this second hospital. Her blood pressure was dangerously high. She was at that point showing signs of kidney failure. Okay. And here is how it worked out. The doctor who was working this case says that the patient was in her second trimester. Blood pressure began rising. The fetus had been diagnosed with genetic abnormalities and wasn't expected to survive. That's the sort of consideration that for a reasonable person would change their mind on medical intervention. But for religious zealots, it means basically nothing. So the woman, apparently it was feared, could develop life-threatening preeclampsia and thought that she needed an abortion. 8 states border Tennessee, abortion is banned in all but 2 of them. And apparently, according to the gynecologist, the woman kept asking her if she was going to die. I kept saying, I'm trying, we're gonna make it happen. We just need to get you to the right place where you can be taken care of. And I personally think that the right place where she should be able to be taken care of is the United States of America. And up until recently, it was mostly true. But now, if you live in an increasing number of states across the country, you better hope that you've got a gassed up ambulance that can make the 6 or 8 or 10 hour drive to a place that still remains a part of modern civilization. Thankfully, she is still alive, okay? That's the good news, but she could have died, and people will die as a result of this. Michael, what do you think?
Well, I think these are the stories, sadly, that are going to impact change in the other direction. These are the stories that informed Roe v. Wade. If you look at a lot of the journalism around the time of that ruling and previous to it, there were stories, harrowing stories, of women trying to get an abortion and either themselves not surviving, their fetus, not surviving, and all of the problems that go into that. Of course, you know, their fetus being challenged to the point where they had to have an abortion. All of those challenges are what will impact the next wave against the Dobbs decision. And I think it's a tragedy. But again, the compilation of these are what's going to hopefully change some minds.
Yeah, maybe we get to.
It is what it is now, but and it's horrible. And you have to talk about how tragic and horrible this is, that a woman would have to sit in an ambulance for this long. But if we're going to change it back the other way, these are the stories that will unfortunately have to move people.
Yeah. Just devastating. So needless. We are a country who faces actual crises. We have decided that rather than address those, we're going to needlessly create more. We're going to dial back the clock a half century, a century, and just create new daily sources of suffering for so many people. That's what.
And there's nothing Christian about having a woman sitting in the back of an ambulance for 6 hours fearing for her own life. There's nothing Christian about that.
Exactly. Okay, everybody, we do have more news to get to, but this is the end of our first hour. If you're on our linear platforms or on the podcast, thank you so much for watching and or listening. But if you're on the members app, Twitch, YouTube, a number of other places, we've got so much to talk about. So don't go anywhere. We're going to be gone for a couple of minutes, but then Michael and I will be back. Oh man, we've got some big stories to talk about. So we'll be back in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.